Good morning, Oregon. I'm Finn J.D. John, fj@offbeatoregon.com, and this is the thrice-weekly Offbeat Oregon History Podcast. Thank you for queuing me up today, and I hope you enjoyed the show. This story was first published on October 27th of 2013 under the headline, Vigilantes Went Too Far with Murder of Suspected Rustler. Here we go. John Hawk's neighbors had few good things to say about him. Nearly everyone agreed that he was the most surly, unpleasant man they'd ever met. That, as much as anything else, was why he was about to die on a cold, clear, moonlit night by the Lostine River in 1881. Hawk was 31 years old at the time, a native Oregonian, born in 1850. He'd boldly gone into Nez Perce tribal lands and staked a claim, which is rather a dangerous thing to do in the days of Chief Joseph, and had started ranching on Prairie Creek, 3 miles from what is now the town of Joseph. Hawk liked his privacy. Rumors that Hawk was rustling cattle started fairly quickly, and they seem to have been spread at least in part by his father-in-law, George Richardson, who, along with several other neighbors, went so far as to file theft charges against him in 1877. Hawk was acquitted of all charges in this case, but most other cattlemen in the area didn't for a moment believe he was innocent. Although historians John and Donna Scovlin, having examined what remains of the record, suggest he probably was. In any case, after the trial, hostility toward Hawk became open and blatant, and he responded in kind. After the trial, a group of other stockmen from the area approached him and told him he needed to leave the area if he knew what was good for him. Furious, he had them all arrested and charged with mob action, although the charges were promptly dismissed. Of course, it would have been easy enough for Hawk to take the pressure off simply by giving some assurance that he was not, in fact, a rustler. This he steadfastly refused to do, apparently on the theory that he shouldn't have to. That stubbornness would eventually kill him. In the late 1870s, rustling horses and cattle was a great business for those who could get away with it. Typically, rustlers would work in gangs, scouting herds of unattended horses and cattle and simply rounding them up and driving them off to faraway markets, where the brand wouldn't be recognized. The market for stolen horses and cattle was being driven by the process of settlement on the Great Plains. As the buffalo herds were progressively exterminated, farmers were settling in and looking around for livestock with which to outfit their new farms. A farmer in Lexington, Nebraska had no way of knowing if a heifer driven in from eastern Oregon was stolen property or not, and he was willing to pay several times more than that animal sold for at local eastern Oregon markets. All over eastern Oregon, the temptation to become a rustler was becoming a real thing, especially for young men. It was a gang of Wallowa County horse wrestlers on the run from the law after they'd been identified that perpetrated the 1887 massacre of Chinese miners in Hell's Canyon, not far from John Hawk's place. Rustler predation could mean the difference between surviving a lean year as a rancher and being put out of business for good. Law enforcement was scant, and as Hawk's enemies saw it, it was unreliable, too. They remained convinced that he was a rustler, so his acquittal felt like an injustice to them. And as the following years went by, they grew more and more convinced that Hawk was a thief. A tough winter had left their herds considerably thinned, with many animals simply disappearing. Perhaps they were rustled, maybe they simply froze to death on the winter range and weren't found. But the ranchers blamed Hawk. Hawk's herd, however, was big and growing, fast, unnaturally fast. As it later turned out, he had made an arrangement with one of his few friends that explained it. That friend, Fred Probstall, was going through a divorce and wanted to hide some of his assets from the court so that his wife wouldn't get any of them. The deal the two of them struck was that Probstall would use the assets to buy a herd of cattle which would bear Hawk's brand, and the two of them would be able to tell them apart by looking at where on the animal's rump the brand was placed. This was soon done, but it caused all kinds of unexpected trouble. From the standpoint of everyone else in the area, it looked like their cattle were somehow getting added to Hawk's herd, and if they couldn't figure out how he was doing it, that didn't shake their confidence that somehow he was. Finally, a small group of cattlemen decided to take action. To kill John Hawk. They started off by trying to find a gunman for hire who would do the job. The going rate for this sort of blackguard work was $500. However, Hawk had forged a fearsome reputation, and although they did eventually find a taker, he subsequently backed out. That having not worked, they started making plans to catch Hawk en masse. Hawk must have had a friendly ear at the table, though, because every time they got together to talk about killing him, he seemed to show up, hand in the butt of his .44, to call their bluff. Quote, "Hello, gentlemen," he said on one occasion. "I understand you're after me. Now, while you're getting me, I'll get some of you, so cut loose." Finally, the conspirators decided that they would have to resort to extreme measures to get their man. They'd ambush him. Their first attempt failed. But finally, on that moonlit night, they followed Hawk to his camp on the Lostine River. After Hawk had settled into his bedroll, one of the vigilantes, the one who'd lost when they drew lots, walked into his camp. A pistol roared. "My God, I'm shot!" shouted Hawk. Thereupon, all the others fired into the tent. No one was supposed to be blameless, that was part of the deal, and John Hawk was well and truly gone. The vigilantes soon found out that their anonymity was well needed. When the frontier community learned what had happened, even folks who'd hated John Hawk were outraged. A gunfight was one thing, and that was bad enough, although they would tolerate it. This was, after all, the American West, and it was, after all, 1881. But a mob of midnight assassins sneaking into a man's camp and squirting lead into him while he slept? That was another matter, and utterly intolerable. Soon there was a price on the vigilantes' heads. Community members passed a kitty, and soon there was more than $3,000 in it. $3,081. John Hawk, as it turned out, was considerably more well-liked in death than he'd appeared to be in life. Eventually, three men were arrested and charged, but it was never clear whether they were part of the vigilante gang or if they'd just simply been convenient scapegoats. All three of them were single, and two of them were oddball characters that few locals much liked. All were acquitted for lack of evidence. The vigilantes never struck again in Wallowa County after that. There was a sense of shame about the whole affair, and Wallowa County residents who knew the men involved and disapproved of what they'd done kind of never let them forget it. Key sources in this story have included works by John and Donna Scovlin and the Eugene City Guard Archives. Well, that's our show for today. Thanks again for listening. This podcast is part of Offbeat Oregon History, a public history resource for the state we love. What you're listening to is a reading from one of roughly 330 newspaper columns published between 2008 and today. Other Offbeat Oregon goodies include a Facebook page, a Twitter feed, a fleet of Pinterest boards, and a ton of great historic photos and a bunch more stuff, including visuals for today's show and full citations to its sources, all accessible via our hub page at offbeatoregon.com. This podcast is covered under a Creative Commons license. For details of that, see offbeatoregon.com/cc. Our theme music is by the Atlas String Band and was written by Carmen Ficarra. Listen and download more at atlasstringband.com. Questions, critiques, ideas for future episodes? Email me at fj@offbeatoregon.com. You can also ping me on Twitter at @offbeatoregon or send a message through the Facebook page at facebook.com/oregon.1859. Episodes of Offbeat Oregon History come out every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday morning at around 6 a.m., so the next one will be on your device and ready to go in a couple of days at most. And until then, go out and fill up the rest of today and, if applicable, tomorrow with good stuff. Bye now.